You're listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas.
Welcome back to another edition of The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. And during my 2.5 years of interviewing the best that EuroLeague has to offer, I've seen it all and I've heard it all. I've had players that didn't start playing until they were 18 years old. I've had coaches that have illustrious careers on the hardwood to later just walk away from the game totally or become top coaches and won more as coaches than they did as players. But today I have a person who decided at 21 years of age that he was going to give up the game and just get into the coaching. He's one of the most respected coaches in all of Greece and all of Europe. Please welcome to The Crossover, Coach Yannis Sferopoulos. That was my best Greek accent right there. How was it?
It was perfect. It was perfect. Thank you very much for the introduction, Joe. I'm very happy to talk with you and to be here in the crossover of the EuroLeague.
Perfect. Thank you. First of all, of course, the most important thing is how are you and the family and everybody doing in these difficult times? That's always our first question here in the crossover.
Yes, for sure it's a strange period, this period with the effects of the coronavirus. All of us, we are very careful. We are very worried about the conditions that are around us. We live in Israel. It's a beautiful and nice country. And concerning the coronavirus, although we have our third lockdown, the country is doing well. The vaccination is the best of all the countries, and we are hoping that after a few months everything will be open again, and we will come back to the normal life.
Let's hope so, Coach. Let's hope so. This way we can get this season over with also.
Yes, of course. Basketball-wise, this is very important. I think EuroLeague did so far a great job. And we almost finished the games that were postponed. And so far, so good.
Good. Let's keep it that way. You're from my favorite city. I a lot of people are going to be mad at me. A lot of my Greek friends are going to be mad at me because Thessaloniki, or Salonika, like some people call it.
Yes, Thessaloniki,
It's amazing. I spent a year in Athens, and then I came back and went there and played with artists, and I was like, my Lord, this is like a whole different, it's a whole different part of Greece. It's beautiful. I loved it.
Yes, it's by the sea and a beautiful city with a lot of things that you can do. Has everything like a big city has, but it's smaller than the crowded cities, and the life is more simple, and the people are very warm and close to each other, closer than other parts of Greece.
It's one of the biggest things I missed about Greece was that frappe on the beach, you know, just like overlooking the water with the frappe, just like you're drinking the coffee. I love it.
Exactly. Frappe is a great way to drink your coffee.
Have you found a frappe place out there in Tel Aviv?
No way. No way. No way. I will bring it here.
There you go. There you go. Open up. That's what everybody does in Athens now. They open up coffee shops.
Yeah, exactly. Everywhere we open in Greece coffee shops because it's the easiest and the cheapest way to have fun.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So in Thessaloniki is where you obviously started playing basketball.
Yes, I started to play basketball very young. Not very young, because now, let's say, we see kids in their first ages to start to participate in some basketball schools. But I started, let's say, to play in a club at the age of 14. So I participated in my hometown, the local area of Thessaloniki. It's called Kalamaria, and the club of Apollon. Apollon was the god of the music, and because the club was invented from immigrants that they came, Greek immigrants that came from Pontos area, Efxinos Pontos, and it was not only a basketball club, it was also soccer and plus musical.
And is that because it was the god of music? Because Apollon was the
yes,
god of
exactly,
music?
Exactly. Exactly. That's why they name it Apollo. Anyway, it was my first club, the club when my father played soccer. And my father was also, after he quit playing soccer, he was a member of the board of the football team. I didn't follow him to play football. Me and my brother, we play basketball, both of us. And I started to play in the juniors and all the young categories. But then I moved to the men team for just for 2 years.
Right.
After my second year, I went to the university, physical education in Thessaloniki. So I start to think about my future, that anyway, I was not a great player. I was playing in third league, second league. And I start to coach because I start to coach young kids to start to build the academy in Apollon. That those days, 86, 87, when I start to coach, 1986, 87, Apollon was not a club that had, let's say, academies. So I built the academies with the thinking that as a physical education trainer, I need to have contact with kids and to teach them. So I became like a student in the university and also coach for young kids. So this is how I started in basketball.
It's interesting because I did this podcast with Andrea Tricheri just a couple, about a month
Andrea,
ago.
Andrea, very, very good friend.
Yeah.
And great coach.
Great coach and good guy. And he made it very, of course, every time you ask him a question, he answers extremely clearly. And he's like a philosopher.
Yes.
He told me the same thing. He said, you know, there was one point where I looked around. I said, what am I doing playing? I'm not as good as most of these guys. I got a coach.
Yes.
And that's what it seems like it is with the young guys. They're like, I just got to give up. I got to get the coaching.
Exactly. I understood that I couldn't be, let's say, a professional player. And as soon as I understood this, then I devoted myself to coach because I love the sport. I love basketball. And I started to coach because I love the sport, not because I was thinking that I will become a professional basketball coach. Let's say that I will leave my family from coaching.
You have a father that played soccer.
Football.
Then he became the director of the club. And then you have two brothers, or he has two sons, I should say, that go into basketball. And now, on top of it, one of them decides to go coach basketball. What is your father saying? Are you crazy? Although basketball is a huge sport in Greece. It's almost bigger than football in most cases.
It used to be bigger than soccer. 90s. In the age of 90s, in the period of 90s, basketball was more popular. But I think now, lately, in Greece, football, again, is the best sport. The most famous and the most popular. My father supported us from the very first moment. Also, my mother, our parents were supporting to us. I remember when I was, 1989, I was 22 years old. They supported me financially to go first time in Europe to attend some clinics. I remember I went in Rotterdam. It was the pre-Olympic tournament, and that was the first time that Hubie Brown came from the NBA to teach the European coaches, and I was there to attend this clinic. So all my family supported us financially also, supported me till I will start to, you know, get some money out of this profession that I started and I wanted to commit and to devote.
Right. You know, it's interesting because I always revert back to this book that I read years ago. And I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It's called The Outliers. And
yes,
you've heard of the
book. I heard of the book, but I didn't read it.
Well, this book, because I'm like, I feel like kids that are growing up today, they're too focused on one thing. You know, sometimes they're too focused too early on just basketball. And I think it's better to go play soccer, to go play other sports, to develop other abilities, footwork, whatever. But this book, It's by an author named Malcolm Gladwell, and it's called The Outliers. And it's based on almost what you're saying, how we respect people. Like, he talked about the Beatles. He talked about Microsoft owner Bill Gates. He talked about Serena Williams. He talked about many people that dedicated themselves from an early age, and they put in a 10,000 hours of work. And I just think that's so important for people at the age of 21 to say, okay, this is what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to focus on. And then put all your efforts into that, because sometimes it's not about, we look at people like LeBron James and we look at people like Michael Jordan and we say, oh my God, they're such great players, but you forget where they came from and how they got there and how much they dedicated themselves.
Exactly. Joe, you are absolutely right. Especially for me and like me, some other coaches also, like, we were not famous professional basketball players. Right. And then for the professional and good players that they play in the highest level, it's easier for them to coach if they want to coach. For us, it was not easy. For me, it was not easy. I worked really hard to reach this point and I devoted myself. My life is only in basketball and specifically in coaching basketball. And whatever I did all these years till this moment, and I continue to do, is to always to learn and to be better and to improve myself. And this is how I didn't know till which point I will reach in my career, till which level I will go. But I work as hard as I could, and I started from small kids, and then third league, and then second league, and then assistant coach in professional sport in PAOK of Saloniki. And then I moved to the national team assistant coach of Greece. And then step by step, I didn't know till which point I will go. And now that I work so hard, I look a little behind me and I know that I sacrifice a lot of things. I sacrifice a lot of moments with my family, with my kids. I sacrifice a lot from my friends, from companies, you know, but I don't regret, because I love basketball. I'm in love with basketball, and I'm very proud and happy that I devote my life to basketball. No matter if you win, if you lose, if you get titles, okay, we want to get titles. We want to win as much as we can, but at the end of the day, this journey from 19, I start to coach 19, 86-87 season. So from 86-87 till today, this is 34, 35 years of coaching. So you understand that, you know, this 35 years journey is amazing, and I never regret what I've done so far to come to this point. And maybe now, people are thinking, okay, he's the coach of Maccabi Tel Aviv and in the highest EuroLeague level, let's say. But to reach this point, you know, I work really hard and I'm proud how I work. And I think that this is a big example for a lot of young coaches, and not only coaches, in general in your life. If you, a positive example for the new generations, if you want something and if you fight hard for what you want, you can achieve it. You never know till which point you will reach, but you need to fight for everything in your life. And this is not only for basketball, I mean everything.
Everything. You had a quote that I read the other day that is something that I always, when I speak to younger kids and speak to, you know, kids that I do speeches for, whatever, is what you put into something is what you get out of it. I always try to say that, you know, let's break it down into like little pieces. If you are in school and you study 50% of the material, you're going to get a 50%.
Exactly. You know? Exactly.
If you're on the basketball court and you're giving 50% effort on a daily basis, that's what you're going to get. You're only going to find 50% of your thing. And it's so hard nowadays in the atmosphere of Nintendo or PlayStation and people sitting around, young kids sitting around and playing video games all day long.
Exactly. Yeah,
I did the math with those 10,000 hours, and it says you'd have to work 6 hours a day for 4 to 5 years, or 3 hours a day for almost 9 years. I think I think you've surpassed those numbers, haven't you?
Yes, of course, of course. Yeah. We work also when we sleep. You know,
exactly.
There are a lot of moments that I wake up and I go to find a paper and a pencil to bring it to the close to my bed to write down, and I write down
just in case something pops up in your head, right? You have to write
yes,
it down.
Yes, and I write it down not to forget it the other day. You know,
yeah,
what
coach,
I have to work, what I have to
coach,
do.
Coach, we're getting old now. We have to write those things down whenever you can.
No, you are young. I am older. You are young.
No, I'm 55.
Okay, same age.
Yeah. Like I just said, I'm 55. So let's just say, for example, I was dumb enough to have another child. And I have like a 16-year-old child right now at 55.
Perfect. My son is 17.
17,
My younger.
So this is a perfect example. I'm going to put it in your world then. And you're a coach or whatever. No, let's put it back in my world where I never played the game. And I send my son to the club, to the basketball club. And he's playing. And he's not playing a lot of time. The point I'm getting at is how difficult it is for a 21-year-old, 22-year-old coach to coach players that are 16, 15, maybe you were coaching 14, that have parents that are 40, 45 years old. This is a very difficult, sensitive subject for coaches.
Very difficult, very big school for me also, because parents are parents now. In these ages, but also the parents were the same. They had the same mentality to help their kids and to protect their kids also in basketball, because they think that they help the kids if they are doing this, if they put pressure to the coach. They think, but it's not right. Also, the same way they did it in the 80s when I started, the late 80s when I started, 90s when I started to coach. But to me, it was big school. And till now, let's say, all the experiences that I got from coaching young kids are very important also to the professional sport. I had parents that they were not happy with their kids. Maybe they were cursing me also in the stands, you know.
Of course, yeah. Greek is very passionate. The Greek people are very passionate.
Yes, but I stay focused to my thinking, to my belief, and I was not against the kid because of his parent from one side. From the other side, I wanted to be fair, no matter what the parent wanted or the parent was thinking about his kid. So I want to be fair for the kid and for all the kids, how they work to achieve also the minutes or the time of the role or the role in the team. So if somebody I was thinking that needs to play more time than somebody else, I always going with my believing and my principles, what is the best for the team, no matter if the parent was happy or not happy. And that was big school, because now, let's say, maybe in this point of view, we don't have, let's say, parents to our job. We are a professional now, but we have, let's say, the media, we have the fans.
You have agents. Which is
agents, media, that they can interfere you.
Right.
We have to focus to do our job with our criteria, without believing, with our philosophy, no matter what everybody says around.
At 21, you're coaching in your club, and you've mentioned this twice in the interview so far. You didn't know this was going to be your lifelong journey. You had no idea. You didn't go into it saying this is going to be my lifelong journey. But when did you start to dream? When did you start to like say, okay, because after this you go to PAOK. And PAOK is
yes.
one of so the biggest
So this is
clubs.
Very good question. This is very good question. And
That's why they gave me the show, coach. That's why they gave me the crossover show, because I ask good questions.
Great job, man. Okay. There were some levels, some stages that start to think me, I started to think that I'm doing something good and I can do some. I can go to the next level. So my first step was when I moved from Apollon Kalamariás, the club that I was coaching 11 years. It was an amateur club.
That's a lifetime for you because you're only 29 at this time.
Yes, exactly. I started with young kids, and when the kids became men, I coached them in a men team, and we took the championship in third league of Greece. So after this, Pau called me to be assistant. So that was one step to get into the professional sport. The second step was when they called me, Coach Petropoulos called me to go to the national team of Greece as an assistant coach. That was also one more step for me.
The assistant coach came about, what, 3 years into your time at PAOK?
Yes, exactly. 3 years after 2001, my fourth season started in PAOK, and I was also assistant coach in the national team of Greece. So that was also one step that showed me that, okay, I moved to the professional sport now. From professional sport, they took me, they wanted me in the national team of Greece. And then for the next level, it was very important for my career that I move as an assistant coach out of my city. So I moved from PAOK to Olympiakos to be assistant coach. So Olympiakos called me in to be assistant coach. And that was first time I go out of my city to coach. And that was also the third step that showed that I could do something higher. So from that moment, of course, when you move from your city because of basketball, because you grow as a coach and you move on in your coach's life. Yes, as a person also, of course. Yeah. And you are more mature, and you know you are more experienced. You improve yourself because you want to improve every day, every year. So that was the stages that put me in the professional point of view.
At PAOK, you're an assistant coach, and you go from your small club, let's say small club in Apollon, and you go to PAOK, and all of a sudden you're in the EuroLeague. And you're assistant coach in the EuroLeague, and you did that for a few years, and then the coach of the team leaves the team, and you become the interim head coach.
Yes.
So you're head coaching a team, PAOK, who is, I don't want to say this in a bad way, but they're on a decline.
Yes, that was after 3 years. My fourth year was I took over February. The coach was
Kostas
Flevarakis. Kostas Flevarakis. Yes. He quit. So, and my first game, you know, which was my first game of my career
as a
head coach, PAOK Aris.
You kidding me? With me?
No. Yes.
Are you serious?
No. You wasn't.
Ah, okay. I wasn't there. Okay.
No, you wasn't there.
What year was that? Because I think I was doing the time. I said I think he must have been assistant coach there when I played in Aris.
Yes, I was when you played.
It was the worst game of my life.
I don't remember this. To tell you the truth, I don't remember your performance in that game. But
I have to tell you the story because I gave up basketball after Ike. I said I'm done. And then Aris kept calling me all year, and I went 8 months without playing basketball. I didn't touch a ball for 8 months.
Wow.
And finally I decided, I said, I'm going to go back and I'm going to do it.
Yes.
They were giving me enough money to go back and do it, to be honest. So I go back. The first game we play is against Panathinaikos with Selgo, and they're undefeated and we win.
Wow. I don't remember this.
Yeah, and I had like 18 points, 12 rebounds my first game. And everybody's like, oh, Arlauskas, you know, he's going to save us. We were in second last place and you were in last place.
Yes.
And 2 days later, we played against you. And what happened was, you know, I haven't played in 8 months. So I played one good game and I was dead. And the next game I went out, I think I scored 2 points against you guys. You guys beat us by like 20.
No. This is not the game, my first game.
That's not your first game, but you must have been the assistant coach then.
So. I was assistant coach, yes.
I blame you for like putting up a defense to shut me down, but I couldn't move. I was physically destroyed.
I remember one time, now you said I blame you. I remember one time we play Panathinaikos. And mm-hmm. I will tell you a story now for Saras.
Uh-huh.
And Saras was in Panathinaikos, and I put a play for one guy, the guy that Saras was guarding, to run up and down, let's say, for stagger screens from Diamond out and back and forth. And he was not chasing, yes. And in halftime, Saras came and told me, "Coach, come on, don't run me so much." I will remind to Saras if you will not see this podcast.
That's so funny. There's like the little strategies to tire out the yeah. But nowadays, you know, you got guys like, well, you know, in our day, Reggie Miller in the NBA, or now J.C. Carroll. You watch them run back and forth,
yes,
all game long.
Yes,
it's like,
yes.
I don't know how they do it. So,
yeah.
Go back to opportunities again. Now that you're in Olympiacos, you leave what, you know, PAOK is financially struggling.
Yes, I was 8 years in PAOK. Also in PAOK, 8 years, and I worked really hard also to establish my coaching presence in the professional sport. I remember the first 2 years in PAOK, we didn't have the luxuries, I can say now, that we have the coaches, assistant coaches has with computers and internet and system to cut. I cut video with two videos.
I prepared the video
for the team with two videos. I didn't sleep for 2 years.
Yeah.
Believe me, Joe, I was sleeping, let's say, maybe 2-3 hours every day. And maybe 1 hour to take a nap to...
Right.
I didn't have time to prepare the videos. When we fly to play away, because we didn't have a laptop to work during the flights, I had to prepare the video for the coach. The head coach was Vika Serf, the Israeli Vika Serf, in the beginning, in my first appearance in PAOK. I had to prepare the video for the team. I had it ready. So I do all the job in Thessaloniki. When we fly, I wish to fly, because during the flights I was sleeping, and then, yes, that was the only moment that I could sleep. You understand? You know, I couldn't sleep to fix the video for the team. It was very hard.
You yes. couldn't bring the big TV with you, you know, with the VHS.
Yes. We had two VHS, one playing, one recording, and make the video. So that was a tough moment. But this is why I said I work really hard and with difficult conditions. And but I wanted to succeed, and whatever I want to do, I want to succeed. And maybe you will not succeed, but you give your maximum. And you know, when you give your maximum, at the end of the day, even if you will not succeed, you have your consequence quiet. But at the end of the day, you go to sleep, you put your head to the pillow, and you say, okay,
yeah,
I've done.
Relax.
I've done maximum what I could have done, and but was not enough, let's say, to win a game. But at the end of the day, you are satisfied because you give everything, you give all your power, your soul, everything that you could for the win. And the win didn't come, but you are at least you are not hesitating. That was something that you could do more, let's say. Always, as coaches, we hesitate about decisions, but this is different. How to prepare the game, you know, how to prepare the game and how to work for one game. If you give maximum, I think this is the most important.
How many nights do you spend sometimes not sleeping because you should have maybe put in another play, or you could have like maybe put another defense in at the end of the game?
You don't sleep after wins, you don't sleep after losses. Always you are thinking how and what you can do to help the team to play better, or one player to how to use him better, and always like that.
Now through this, you got the head coaching job for the interim in PAOK. But then you go to Olympiacos.
I continued to PAOK, and I said to the management, to the owners, there was not owner this moment. It was a committee. It was financially, PAOK was struggling, and there was a committee who was deciding. And I said, I don't want to continue as a head coach. I want to be assistant coach, because I want to be also in the national team assistant coach. Because
if you're a head coach, you cannot coach the national team at the same time.
You can, but you know, to start as a head coach again from the beginning of the season, And right. missing in the preseason when you need to put all your stuff, it's not, I think right. it was not. So I get back to the assistant coach 3 more years. In 2005, I moved to Olympiacos. But I want to say that in these years of the national team, I was very, how to say, happy and very honored and very lucky that I was in the Olympic team of Greece. Of 2004 when the Olympic Games were in Athens, in our country. And that was big experience. It was big, how to say, memory, sports memory, to participate in your country, the Olympic Games. And I was member of that team.
That's like great timing in your life, you know? That's yes, like a perfect, yes. you could have gotten the same job 3 years ago and not done the Olympics,
exactly,
you know?
Exactly, that's why I said also I was lucky, because the Olympic Games in your country, you feel the atmosphere around, and it was big happiness for all the country that the Olympic Games was in Athens, and after so long, and after 100 years, and you know, I don't know when again the Olympic Games will be in Athens. And I was proud that also my kid was present, you know, to the parade, and you know, my wife, and that was a great memory.
There's very few Greek players that I talk to and do these interviews with, like Theo Papaloukas and all these guys that I talk to, and they always talk about 1987. You know, that was like the most, that was their moment, you know, when the Greek team won the title, and it was like they were out on the streets and partying, and that was what converted so many Greek people to play basketball.
Exactly. 1987 was a big change in basketball in Greece. This team of 87, national team of Greece, changed all the momentum and all the history. Changed the history, really. And they put basketball in the next level. And that was also the first time that a sport succeeded to be a team sport, and also individual, to be first in Europe, let's say. And that was big impact to all the society of Greek society, not only basketball. It was happiness of the society because Greece was first.
Every European country that I've been to, that I've lived in, and I love so much, has such pride over everything, you know, over the individual athlete, the team athletes, it's
you're really absolutely right.
It's beautiful to watch, because you're small countries. I'm obviously from America. It's a bigger country. Even though you have that pride, it's not the same as it is in Greece or Spain or Italy or wherever.
Yeah, exactly. So I moved to Olympiacos. Yes.
Yeah, you go to Olympiacos as an assistant
of Jonas Kazlauskas.
Right, and you go back to cutting videos and doing that.
But I was the first assistant. I was helping in the video, but the most important thing was that I get back to EuroLeague, because with PAOK, my first 4 years was in EuroLeague, but the last 4 years was not in EuroLeague. It was in EuroCup, and then I get back again in EuroLeague. So from 2005, I was back in EuroLeague. And that was very important, getting experiences in the highest level again, and work with good coaches and learn from good coaches like Jonas Kazlauskas, like Pini Gerson that was after him, and Panayotis Giannakis that was the third coach I was with him in Olympiacos. So it was big, big step ahead for my career.
Right. And then, but you left that to go head coach in Rhodes, right? Or Rhoda?
Yes, Rhodos. Yes, Rhodos. Yeah, Rhodos Island. Yes, because
you know, coach, I'm learning one thing about you. You only like to live in like good cities, in good places. So far, you've been in Thessaloniki, you've been in Athens. You're taking off. We're gonna get you to Russia here in a minute, but
which is not a bad place
either. But still. But 3 years on the island coaching and doing an incredible job. I mean, now you have your own team for three seasons.
That was my... I left from Olympiacos because I wanted to start as a head coach from the beginning of the season. And Rodos came in the right moment after my contract finished in Olympiacos. They proposed to be head coach in their team. So I took over. I get the challenge because, you know, sometimes for coaches, they don't want to risk. They don't want to leave the safety of the assistant coach, safety of the assistant coach in one team that you go well as an assistant coach, and to move to head coach. But I wanted to be head coach. I wanted, after this, let's say, period in professional sport, 8 years in PAOK and 3 years in Olympiacos, 11 years totally as an assistant coach in professional sport, and 11 years before in Apollon team, 22 years of coaching, that I understood that that was the moment to start as a head right. coach. So I moved to Rhodes, that they gave me the chance, and I will never forget that Rhodes was the first team, Colossos, that gave me the chance to be a head coach in Greece. So 3 years, three times we participated in the playoffs, and my first year was the first time that Rhodes participated in the playoffs. The most important to me was that in Rhodes we established a way of working that helped the team to continue with the same way, to work with the same way, professionally wise. We created weightlifting room. You need to understand, small team came from second league, you know, small gym, you know. We start to create the conditions and all the things around to work professionally. And that was the big thing. Plus that the results were always positive. Let's say we finished eighth in the first year. My first year participated in the playoffs. The second year we finished fifth and we could play in ULEB Cup. But, you know, financially the club couldn't afford to play also in Europe. Big trips, you know, to fly from the island every game, you know, hotels, extra expenses. We didn't play. And my third year, again, we finished in the playoffs. And then Jonas Kazlauskas called me from Russia, from Moscow.
Russia with love.
From Russia with love.
And with an offer to coach a big team.
Yes, to go back in an assistant coach. But Jonas Kazlauskas is a great coach. He's a good friend of mine, very good friend of mine. And I owe him, let's say, part of my career because he not only took me three times with him as his assistant, Olympiacos, Moscow, and also 2009, 2010. In Greek national team again, second time in the national team of Greece as an assistant. So he helped me to grow as a coach. He helped me to learn from him, and I want to thank him one more time. He proposed me to go as his assistant. He wanted me also my last season in Colossos. I remember that in Colossos those days was started the economical crisis in Greece, and also start to have some financial problems. So he said, okay, come now, let's say in the middle of the season. I said, I cannot leave the team, you know, I have an honor, you know, although I could leave because payments were bad and everything was bad. I didn't leave, I stayed till the end, and then I left. The summertime, so I moved to Moscow, 2011-12 season.
You mentioned something earlier that kind of clicked in my head. You said that, because I look at it in a different way, or I looked at it in a different way until you just said, assistant coaches sometimes don't like to leave the comfort of
yes.
of being an assistant coach. I've always looked at it from the outside looking in, like some people are just lifetime assistant coaches.
Because yes, and they are very good on that.
Yeah, but they've been labeled that also. They've been labeled that, like
yes, labeled. But some of them, they want to be like good assistant coaches, and this is very understandable, because let's say they don't want, let's say, the big pressure, because the big pressure always goes to the head coach, but they want to coach and they want to give ideas and they want to work, let's say, with in the highest level. So they want to stay as assistant coaches. And this is very understandable. There are some coaches they want this, there are some coaches that they want to continue, you know, because if you start as a head coach and you don't go well, you need to go back in the, you know, in the previous
situation. But it becomes difficult because even though the assistant coach doesn't have the pressure of they don't have the public perception pressure as far as the news is concerned, the media is concerned. They're kind of like the second, they're in the back seat, so to speak. But from Monday to Thursday before that game, there's a lot of pressure on assistant coach because the head coach is
of course,
you know, you do this, you do this, you do, and there's still pressure. But I've always, you made me think of it differently, that sometimes it's just a comfort zone where people want to be assistant coaches for the rest of life, and that's fine. And other people, I felt like, especially in Spain, I've seen it, that they never got the opportunity because they were labeled as an assistant coach,
yes,
unfortunately. And I don't know. Now I question if some of those people might have just been extremely comfortable with where they're at as an assistant.
I think for me personally, if you want to continue as a head coach, you need to risk. Let's say you need to take the risk somehow, somewhere in your career. And let's say if you see it financially, sometimes it's the safety is to stay assistant coach if you get a good salary. I mean, if you are assistant coach in professional sport.
Right.
If you want to make the next step, you need to risk, you know, because if you go as a head coach, maybe you will not succeed, and maybe you will, after that, you will disappear. You never know.
Right.
And you
it's
know,
a risk.
It's a risk, yes.
And I have to ask you about your one, you only spent 1 year in Moscow with Cheska, with Jonas. Of course, there's only one game I can talk to you about right now. I didn't know what you mean. Yeah, I didn't know you were the assistant coach of what is one of the most famous games in EuroLeague history.
Yes.
The 22-8 run by your old team, Olympiacos.
Yes.
And the one-handed floater by Princesses to win the final. I don't even know.
It's tough. It's tough to be from the other side.
What was the locker room like after the game? I've never seen a game that I felt was so dominated by a team through 31, 32 minutes. I
mean, yes, it was, 32 it was, minutes, yes.
It was clear that
28th minute, the difference I think was 18, 19 points, something like that, 12 minutes before the end. Look, it was very hard for all of us who were a member of this team to lose like that. And it's something that, you know, stays as a bad memory all the time in your life. And it's not easy to lose a game like that. Imagine this to be the final of EuroLeague. And, you know, it's something that, of course, you will never forget. From the other side, it's a situation that you need to overcome and makes you tougher and makes you more, how to say, wise for the continuation as a coach, as a player, as each one of the staff. I think when you continue after these games, because in our basketball life, we have these games a lot of times, maybe not EuroLeague final, but losing game at the end. And you need to overcome and to be tough. And this is, basketball is like life, you know. No matter how many times you will fall down, because also in basketball you fall down after a bad loss, you have to stand back in your feet and continue to move and to run. And this is the idea out of this game. And this is also the example, like if we transfer basketball basketball actions to life, actions in life.
Yeah, you know, I do my speeches with kids, I always try to explain to them that somehow or another, you have to stay always level. If you play a best game, if you play the best game you've ever played, you can't believe that you're the best player in the world.
Exactly.
And if you play a bad game, you can't believe that you're the worst player in the world.
Exactly. No matter if you win, great win, or you have a great game, or you lose, or you have a bad game, always there is next day and a new challenge. a new challenge, and you need to be ready to compete because of a big win or a big loss, not to be ready to continue. You know, this is the idea.
I always talk about the day that I scored 63 points in Bologna on a Thursday, and then I was, of course, on top of the world, you know? And we come back on Sunday, and we play a big game, a league game against Barcelona, and I play the worst game that I've played the whole season. So it's, you know, that's always the, you can't be too up and you can't be too down. So that's something to teach players, coaches, and everything. And, I mean, obviously that's a tough loss, but you get them back later on. We'll talk about that in a minute. You went to Baniones also as a head coach, but you spent some time in the States also and away from the game. What was that for? Was that the learning process? Was it experience?
I went to States first time 1990. I went to Syracuse University.
Syracuse, that's right by my house.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm from Rochester.
Ah, Rochester? I've been in Rochester.
Yeah. I'm from Rochester, New York.
I didn't know that. Wow.
When did you go? Did you go in the summertime or did you go in the wintertime?
I went summertime because I was working. You know,
that doesn't count. That doesn't count then.
No, it was the basketball camp and I attended the camp.
Jim Boeheim.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was with Jim Boeheim and Bernie Fine.
Yep.
His assistant, and we were together with all coaches, and that was a great experience for me. I was 23 when I went in States first time. So 90. 91, 96, 3 years I went to States in Syracuse. I was also upstate New York in Oneonta.
And yeah, in Oneonta. Yeah, Oneonta was the big guy's camp.
Yes, the big guy's camp. Yeah. Yes.
That's the first thing that I did when I was in high school. My dad said, if you're going to be a man and you're going to play, you have to go to a camp. And I'm like, Mom, Dad, I don't want to go. I don't want to go away. And they sent me to this camp, you know, and it was the hardest
thing. SUNY Oneonta.
It was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. It was the most difficult camp I've ever done. It was so demanding. It made me realize that I can do it, and that it's what I wanted to do. Those were the two things.
I was in SUNY, but I was to the other university, to Hartwick College, with Nick Lambros, a Greek American coach that helped me also a lot. Nick Lambros. And he helped me a lot also to understand the basketball in the U.S. And anyway, that was 3 times that I moved to college basketball. Then I moved to 2006 when I was assistant coach. I participated the first time with the Cleveland Cavaliers, the Summer League team. So that was my first time that 2006 that I was coaching, let's say, international coach in the Summer League team. And I start to learn about NBA and to learn from the NBA coaches. And then I was also in Houston, 2012 with the Rockets. Coach McHale was there and all his assistants. And we had also, again, the Summer League team and coaching periods. And
what's the difference between American coaching and European coaching?
A lot. We need another hour to discuss about that.
All right, we'll move on. That I've asked that question a lot to a lot of coaches, like David Blatt and a lot of other guys, and they give me the same answer. One of these days, I'm going to do a crossover interview with just talking about the difference.
Just only about that, yes. Just exactly. Only about that. Exactly.
Most of the information that I got from coaches that went there was, you know, how to deal with everything outside of the game. Here you have to be more focused in the game, and there it's almost you have to be more focused outside of the game to learn everything else. But we'll get into that another time.
Yeah, exactly.
But you found that to be a good experience? You found it to be something helpful for your...
Always, always. Always you learn. If you are open to learn, you learn. And when you want to learn, you learn. And so my experience from the college and from the NBA coaches was excellent. And all the time, something new you hear, they say something. So listening to this, what they said, you put in a different perspective what you was thinking about one thing, let's say. So this helped you to be wider with your ideas and with your new dimensions in the game, how you can play the game, how you need to treat your players, a lot of small details that you can, you know, you can gather from each one of the coaches there. And different, of course, mentality, different way of handling the situations, of handling the games. Before I come to Maccabi, I had also the experience to participate the mini camp of Oklahoma with Coach Donovan, and also to go to Brooklyn when the season started, and to participate also 1 week with Brooklyn. And that helped me to, because I have discussions with them, to understand how they handle the so many games that they have and all these back-to-back games that we have also in EuroLeague. So the organizations, how they have all the NBA teams to avoid the fatigue for the players, to avoid the, to prevent injuries and all this stuff, now we are learning in EuroLeague. And this is something that I think owners of clubs, organizations and managements of the clubs needs to invest better in EuroLeague.
Right. Yeah, that obviously is going to be talked about in the future. But it seems like everybody's a step behind sometimes. And
yes, let's say charter flights are, how to say, like must to fly charter, all teams. And all teams, they are not flying charter. So this is something that will prevent an injury. If you don't have an injury, that means that you will not pay, let's say, 500,000 extra to bring one player that needs to replace the injured one. So you save some money, you think that you save some money because you don't fly charter flights, but at the end of the day, you will give this money even more for some other reason because of the injuries. Because that you, let's say you don't have good conditions to the physios, to the all these new stuff that doctors and physios using to take out the fatigue of the players, we need to invest, let's say, the clubs, because this will protect the players from injuries.
You know that, and of course I'm American. I played in Europe. I moved back to Europe, and I don't plan on ever going back. You know, Europe's one of my favorite places to be in the world, and especially Spain. But the mentality of seeing the in Europe, everybody lives for the now. And they don't, you like what you're saying, you don't think about what is going to happen in 2 weeks or in 2 months or in whatever. And I think that mentality is finally coming here now, that you have to start to worry about how to prevent, you know, injuries,
exactly.
You know, over the players. But let's go. Panionios was a great stop for you.
Panionios was great because it was also a EuroCup team. And for me, as a head coach, I didn't have the chance to coach two games every week in Kolossos. So Panionios was also one step ahead for me. So I start to coach, let's say, in Greek League, but also EuroCup. So it was something new and something more for me. And something
How much does that change your coaching philosophy too, as far as practice, travel?
Practice a lot and travel a lot, because you need to be ready to play two games every week and instead of one.
Practice a lot. Players don't like to hear that. They think when you play two games, you practice less.
I changed the practice not to practice a lot. How we practice. No, a lot of practice.
See how old players think? We always say, we don't say a lot of practice ever.
I know that, especially now with EuroLeague, that we don't practice. It's like the NBA. We practice very few practices.
God, coach, how much I would love to play nowadays.
Of course. All the players want this, yes.
Yeah, no practice. You play 16 minutes a game, rotations. You know, I see Americans, they score like 4 points and 3 rebounds, and they're doing, it's a great season. I'm like, what? I'm like, we used to have to play 40 minutes a game.
Exactly. Now I don't believe that players can play 40 minutes a game.
I don't know.
Not 40, but let's say 35 minutes a player, after 2 months, this player will be exhausted and maybe injured. So, you know, you need to have stability in his performance. That's why you need to,
Coach, that's going to be another podcast that we can do for an hour, because I don't really feel that way. But I understand the philosophy, but these guys are, everything's so much better now. The conditions are so much better. The charter flights, the doctors, the medical staff, the floors.
Still, it's very hard for a player to play 40 minutes, you know.
I know. That's what everybody tells me. I don't believe it, though. So so now you go back to Olympiacos.
Yes.
Why was, if you can tell me this, I don't know if you can tell me this, why was Yorgos Bartzokis not coaching the team anymore? They were 3-0 in the EuroLeague. They were 2-1 in the Greek League, and all of a sudden you step in. It was, unless my information's wrong.
Yes, they are not wrong, but they are not exactly these results were not exactly. Let's say Bartzokas play one cup game, Olympiacos play one cup game with Bartzokas against Panathinaikos, and they lost in Oaka. And then Bartzokas, there was big pressure from fans, and Bartzokas quit.
Ah, he quit. Then, okay.
Yeah. Then Milan Tomic took over for 1 month. I think, I don't remember. Milan also a good friend of mine, and we cooperate together really good in Olympiacos. And
he's been there forever.
Yes,
he's been there. Yes. I played against him when he was a player.
Milan is a legendary player of Olympiacos, and when you think Olympiacos, you think about Milan, Milan Tomic. Milan was the head coach, and after, I don't remember exactly, 1 month, November, I remember that it was November, they called me that they wanted me to continue. So I went to Olympiacos. I knew Olympiacos from my previous participation as assistant coach. I knew the people around. I knew how big club is Olympiacos, and it was easy for me to adjust even in the middle of the season. By the way, I want to say the job to you now that my last three jobs I took over November. Panionios was November of 2012. I took over and for 2 years, and then Olympiacos November of 2014. 4 years, and then now Maccabi, November 2018.
Well, I mean, maybe that's your lucky month.
Yes, but it's not easy. It's not easy to get into a team in the middle of the season, and especially in EuroLeague, that you have three games every week.
I have that for you coming up in Maccabi, but I want to get into your time at Olympiacos now you're head coach. Now you got your own team. You're coaching a EuroLeague team, which is the biggest step you have. I mean, if you didn't dream about it before, it's happened and it's there in front of you. And you get into this Final Four after a big, crazy win against Barcelona in the playoffs. And you got Cesca, and you're down 9 with 4 minutes to go. And of course, my man, Billy takes over the game and does his thing, and you guys win. Was there a moment that you said to the team, guys, we're down 9 4 minutes ago. Did you see what happened last year? Did you see what happened 2 years ago? This team will choke, believe me. Come on, coach, tell me the truth.
No, I didn't say something like that. But, for me as a coach, let me go back to Barcelona game series, what you said. That was the playoff games, and we didn't have the home court advantage. We lost the first game in Barcelona, easy, and we won the second one. And that win was the first win that Olympiacos ever win in Barcelona, ever.
The game, the first game ever?
That game. The first game ever that Olympiacos win in Barcelona was this game.
I never knew that.
History of both clubs. So you understand how difficult it was to break the home court advantage against Barcelona for Olympiacos. That was the first win ever in the history of the club of Olympiacos to win in Barcelona. So then we go back to Athens, to Piraeus, to play the two games in our home court. And that was, let's say, my 4 years in Olympiacos, two games that the pressure of the fans was so big that I feel the gym that was moving. From the shaking, okay? And we won these two games very difficult at the end. And with the 3 points out of Prindesis, the fourth game, we won with 3-1 and we qualified to the Final Four. For me, my first year to qualify to the Final Four for, as a head coach in EuroLeague, to qualify to the Final Four, that was, let's say, like a dream, you know. You never know when you till which point, as I said previously.
But it's a dream. But it's a dream that you explained to us throughout this interview that you really didn't have.
I didn't have.
Which is strange because most people dream about that moment, you know, and as a player, as a coach, or.
I just ride the horse and start to let it
take me wherever it takes me.
Yes. This is what I've done always in my career. Let's say I work hard and I don't know where I will reach, but I work, I give my best. So now we move to the semifinal. And Vasilis started the game not good. You know, he had some minutes in the beginning. He was not good. I took him out. I put him again. And not good again. And out, in and out. I tried to pull him back on the bench, to let him concentrate, to calm down, and then to put him again. One time, second time, I think, if I remember well, he scored 2 points till the end of almost the middle of the fourth period. I think 7-8 minutes before the end. Then that was the first time that he scored a three. And from that moment, the team started to came back. I remember that nobody was believing that we could come back. And, you know, Billy had 1 out of 7 shots at that moment.
But it didn't matter with him. That doesn't matter.
But exactly. He's our leader, and he was our leader. And I was thinking that, let's say, no matter what, our leader needs to be on the court. He's one of the most experienced players. He had some other games that he have done this.
So, many games he's done this.
Exactly. So I trusted him all the time, and I gave him the court at the end. And you remember how we came back with three personal baskets of his. And you know, that was big, big. Also, one more, let's say, step ahead for the club to participate on the final of 2005 against Real Madrid.
I mean, you've done everything as a coach now. You've gotten to the finals. Is it? I mean, it's always a good thing to get to the finals and to play. But you were unfortunate enough to get to the finals 3 seasons, 2 times. The first time was Real Madrid. You get to the final in Real Madrid, playing on their home floor. The second time was 2 years later in 2017. You get to the finals against Olympiacos, beating Cesca once again in another amazing game.
Against Fener.
So your two finals that you've actually coached, you had to coach them in the home court of the other team. I mean, I guess Fenerbahce wasn't the home court, but it was the home country.
Not home court, but it was in Istanbul.
It's the same thing.
And
it's the same
team
thing.
Was full of fans.
Full.
It's not only that. It's also that, let's say, when we play Madrid 2015 in their home court, you remember that 2014 they lost the final.
Right.
And not the final, the trophy. And that was, I think, 17 years that Real Madrid didn't get the EuroLeague.
Coach, it was 20 years because I was the last okay, one to win years. It in 95.
Okay, I don't remember exactly the history of them, but 20 years you play for them, you know the history. 20 years, and you know all the power for them was, you know. And same thing was with Fener, that Fener was in Final Four till that moment, and they lost the previous year, the final in overtime.
It seemed like you not only did you catch the team in their home court, but you caught the team in that process.
In the bad momentum. In the process and a bad momentum.
Yeah, in the process of, it's their turn to win. They have to. They've been to the finals, they've lost, and it was, I'm like, as a coach, do you look back on that as like, I can't believe that this, I mean, there's nothing you can do to change it. You know, every year is a different year and you have to be there. But do you think back like, wow, I mean, this is just bad luck.
I'm not thinking like that. I'm not thinking that it was bad luck, you know, because first of all, to play a EuroLeague final, maybe the fans, they say, oh, we lost the final, we didn't get the final, but it's not easy to go to the final. It's not easy to play the final. And yes, of course, we missed the trophy and we wanted, let's say, to have the chance maybe to play again the games. But, you know, whatever comes, it comes. And in our sports life, we'll not have everything in our in the good way. Let's say this is bad, as I said, momentum when you find the home team to play the final, no, the opponent to play the final in their home court, in their baskets, in their locker rooms, in everywhere with their fans. And, you know, it's not easy, but this is what it is. And no, I don't think that, let's say, it's a bad luck. It's something that, first of all, we know before that the Final Four will be played in Madrid or in Istanbul.
When I was there, my guys that are all online with us here from IMG, I got to give them a shout out because they sent me, you know, so much of the research. And when I saw that, I was like, man, I never really realized that he's been to two finals and both of them were on the home floor in the home country of the other team. That's difficult.
Unlucky to say, I don't know. It is what it is. So I hope that I will have the chance to go again in the Final Four and to try to go to the final and to try to win the trophy.
The following year, you lose to Zalgiris in the playoffs, and that's it for you and Olympiakos. It was a tough season. And it seemed like
because we play great till February, I think. I remember that in the middle of the season, during the regular season of that season, there was a period that we were first in the standing after 17 game days. But then springtime, we had 5 injuries at the same moment. And, you know, when you have injuries and the team is not ready to this 10 days, 15 days that you play the playoffs, what can you do? You play all season great, and these 10 days, you are not in the great condition because of injuries. That was that was unlucky. That period was unlucky. And let's say, I believe in, also, let's say, I remember also Milutinov, first game, first period of the series, get injured. So we had 4 players injured and also him. And that was a big, you know, big unluck to play the games with players that were coming from injuries or that they were injured and they play with injections to play. And, you know, we were not in our best shape.
Unfortunately, that's part of the game. Yes, you know, you have to do it, and that's it. My last question about Olympiakos is, just because I love him so much, Spanoulis is to me, I mean, a lot of people might get mad at me, but he's like God to me on a basketball court. I've met him as a person. He came to me in the final four here in Madrid, and I told him how much I love him. The first time I talked to him, I told him how much I love him. He's like, man, it means so much for me to, you know, have someone like you say that, blah, blah, blah. I don't think there'll be anybody like him. You know, guys like Sardas, guys like Juan Carlos Navarro, I think that breed is done because the game has changed. And what we talked about earlier, more teams are playing players 15 minutes, 16 minutes, they don't get to play as much. But tell me what it's like to coach a guy like him, because when... I mean, his work ethic, his ability to take over a game, I think he flies under a radar, so to speak. I think everything he does off the court, because he does so many things on the court. What was it like to coach him and to be a part of that, to have that weapon in your arsenal?
I was very, lucky, let's say, that I coached Billy in the national team. I was assistant coach and I met him first time in national team of Greece. So I knew his working ethic. I knew his big focus during the games. I knew that he could take over. I saw him, let's say, I remember one game against the national team of Turkey when we play the Eurobasket of 2009 that, you know, he started to score from outside like crazy. And I knew what he could do. I lived him in the locker room of the national team of Greece. And this experience I had with him, I was assistant coach, helped me a lot to know what he could do. And for me, the first thing I did, I've done when I started to coach Billy was to let him understand that I believe always on him, even in his bad day. And that was the most important thing, I think, to support him when he's not good. Because Billy is a player that even if he will not start good, or let's say all game he will not be as you expect to be, in 3-4 minutes he can change everything. And in his performance during the game, and there are not a lot of players that they can do this, plus that in the crucial moment he's ready there to take over and to find the solution, sometimes to score like he scored, but sometimes also to pass like he passed to Prindesis. So I think that the most important thing with what I've done with Billy when I coached him was to give him the support that he needed and to let him understand that he's the leader also in his bad days. Because when you have a leader, you need to support him in a bad day and in a day that he will shoot the last shot and he will miss it and you will lose the game. And because after one loss, that you will lose one game with your leader, this game that you will lose, the leader will get five games because of one loss. You understand? If you support him.
Yeah, I mean, he's just, I mean, obviously he's still playing. I'm talking like he's not playing anymore, but he's...
And especially this year, it was not easy for him. He came with an injury,
but the coach,
surgery, and he's playing really good.
Coach, he's got 17 kids. I don't know how he could. I don't know how he's got his fifth or sixth kid. I don't know. It's like every time he told me like 2 years ago in Barcelona, he's like, no, man, no more kids. Then all of a sudden I saw another kid. I'm like,
look, they are very happy family and, you know, they are living really, you know, connected all together, the kids with the family, with the parents. And
I think one, and now to get to the end here, one of your most impressive jobs came where you are right now in Tel Aviv. You took over a team that was, you know, I don't want to say this in a bad way, because one of my favorite clubs in all of Europe is Maccabi, but they were terrible. They were terrible. They were 1-6. The season wasn't going good. And you come in, as you said it before, in November, your month. Is your birthday in November? I didn't look up your birthday. Your birthday's in March. You take over a team that's 1-6, and you turn them around into a team that season should have made the playoffs. There was a couple games at the end that just didn't go your way.
Yes, and at the end we had the same wins with the team, eighth team that qualified, but we missed with the goal average.
The
qualifications.
Yeah.
And we then just one more win.
And then last year, if we want to bring in the scenario of luck or bad luck or good luck, whatever, you actually qualify. You take a team and you qualify. You're tied for fourth place with Ceska. I think you were 19-9. I mean this is the job that you've done to take this team that, of course, I did my research. 9 coaches since David Blatt won the championship in 2014. My first question is, how do you come into an organization like this and just change the culture? Because there wasn't a good culture at Tel Aviv for a few years. It's been years. The winning culture,
the winning mentality.
Yeah, the winning mentality, the essence of what Maccabi Tel Aviv has always been, it seemed like it disappeared a little bit.
Yeah. First of all, When I took over in Maccabi, I knew that Maccabi is one of the greatest and biggest clubs in Europe, and with a great history, with very heavy jersey, and a lot of times of success, a lot of years of success. And, you know, my first priorities were first to work on the court and to change, let's say, the momentum, the negative momentum on the court. How I did this, I focused, let's say, to play better on defense and faster on offense. These two things, primary, I started to work on the court with putting some rules, you know, that everybody needs to follow on the court. And I think slowly, slowly, and practicing, and we start to build our game and to play better and to win games and to start to get back our confidence, because it was also a matter of confidence. Let's say when you lose some games, you have negative confidence. But for me, the psychological part was important. I start to talk, to have small meetings with all the players. But primary, I put this on defense. I insist more to stop the opponent and then play faster on offense. And these few things that I changed on the court, I think gave a different way of playing. And everybody start to be again enthusiastic. First the players, and then also the fans, because, you know, they show something different. They start to show players that they are diving to save a ball, or they are fighting hard and they stop the opponent. We start to win games at the end. We start to, let's say, to win games after losing during the game with a long, big difference. And unfortunately, my first season, we wanted one more win to qualify. My second season, I started with the preparation, with the preseason. That is very important, and we did we put our base. Our basic rules and everything, you know, we had great preseason period, and you saw the result that the results that we were, as you said, when 15 of March, 13, I don't remember exactly the date, we stopped because of the Corona, first Corona lockdown. We were fourth together with CSKA Moscow, and. This is also bad luck, let's say, that we didn't play the playoffs. We didn't play these games because I think that after 5 years, Maccabi qualified to the playoffs and we didn't have the chance to compete. So that was very big disappointment for all of us. And it was not easy to, you know, to handle it, because from one side we were disappointed, from the other side we knew that it was the right thing, because coronavirus was always dangerous, especially in the first days, first weeks, that we didn't know exactly how to protect ourselves and what is this virus exactly. And, you know, it was from one side we knew that we should stop, from the other side we wanted to continue, and that was very, very tough to handle.
You talk so much about the fans. I've seen interviews too where you talk about the fans, and you just said something that always made me realize that the fans in Tel Aviv are, I think, the most knowledgeable fans of basketball in all of Europe.
You are absolutely right, because they know basketball a lot of years. They know to, maybe they don't know the X and O's and the plays and this and that, but they can understand defense of offense, and they can understand this. And because they follow Maccabi a lot of years, and Maccabi was always a top-level team with a lot of trophies, EuroLeague trophies and European championships and local championships and trophies. And, you know, the fans of Maccabi are knowledgeable, and they know to judge. And they gather me and they hug me from the very first moment. And the love that I received from Maccabi fans, and I'm still receiving, is something that I will never forget in my life. And this is something that you know, it's unique. Only here happened to me, and I love them too, you know, because this goes vice versa. As we said, whatever you get, you give. Whatever you give, you get. And they gave me love, I give them love, and I hope that we could have them in these games now that we play without fans. You know, it's very strange and very difficult, the game without them, and it's different, completely different game. I'm not saying that let's say if we had them, we could win some games, some more games here in our home court. This is obvious. But the game, the game, basketball is different without them.
Yeah, I just love, when I played, it was my favorite trip of all of them. It was because of the lifestyle, because of the day you get to spend there, walk around a little bit before the game, and it's just the people are so warm and so friendly, and I loved it. I loved it. Of course, I think I averaged about 30 points a game whenever I went there, so it made me like it even better. Hey, before we get into the end with my questions and the trivia, I got one last question for you. I think is the most important question to always ask a coach, and mostly a player, but a coach that's been around as long as you have. Family. I think you're married with two kids, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
How difficult is it for your wife and your children? Because one thing is they're moving back and forth sometimes, and if they're not moving, they're not with their dad.
Yes.
I mean, you make a huge sacrifice when you decide to become a coach, because you could become a player and be done at 35, 36. You become a coach, you can go till 70, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Look, for my family, I have to say that they are very understandable. And this starts from my wife, because I'm lucky that my wife played also basketball. And she can understand. She can understand what is, let's say, how is to be the wife of a coach. And, you know, also my kids, let's say, when we lose, and I go back home, you know, they know, they don't come to me, they leave me, you know, to my misery. When we win, we are all happy, and you know, this is our life, and unfortunately our life is connected with our profession, and I'm trying to, let's say, not to put, let's say, all this pressure and all this atmosphere and around me to bring it to the family. But sometimes it's not, obviously, when you play games and you lose or you win, it's obviously different how you are at home. You sacrifice a lot of moments with your kids. And my older son, now he's 23, that was the period he get born when I start to coach in PAOK. And that was the period that I work, let's say, I focus so much to my job that I miss a lot him. And also my second son, my younger. And you miss a lot of moments with your family. And you need to have your wife like, your column. Family.
Rock. Yeah.
The rock.
We always say rock, but it'd be normal that a Greek person would say the column. I like that.
Yes. Yeah.
But and, hey, your two sons, who's their favorite team?
Maccabi Tel Aviv. No question.
Come on.
Yeah. No.
Now it is, but I mean, who's their favorite Greek team?
Apollon Kalamargas.
I love it. All right, come on, let's get on to the questions, coach.
One-on-one with Joe R. Lucas.
Thanks for all of your time and your answers and everything that you've just told us here today. But now we're going to really get to know you. So I got a couple questions that are going to be personal questions, all about you and all about the things that you've done and things that you feel. So here we go. You ready to get started?
Okay, yes.
You got a free round trip ticket anywhere in the world. Where's your destination? Where you want to go?
I go by boat on a cruise in Greek islands.
Oh my God. Oh, you just You just spoke in my language. That was my favorite. That was my favorite trip of all time.
Of course, of course. This is amazing. You move from island to island in Aegean Sea, but also Ionian Sea, and
it's incredible.
You move to island every day, and you go in some special coast that only by boat you can go, and it's amazing.
I did that. Great beauty and great waters. I've done it my last year when I was in Athens, and it was just
so you
like,
can understand me.
It's the best vacation I've ever had.
Of course.
Last, and this is a tough question for a coach. Players usually can answer this question. Last movie you watched?
The Irishman.
The Irishman?
Yes, because I like Al Pacino.
Coach, that's a three-hour movie. How do you have time to watch a three-hour? It was off-season, I'm assuming.
Of course, off-season. Of course, summertime. I like Al Pacino, and
he's my favorite movie.
Actor. Yes,
I watched it in two nights, though. It was too long.
Summertime, I have time to watch it.
Yeah, yeah. You sit down at a table, and you could eat anything. You could order anything you want in the world. What's your go-to dish? What's your favorite food?
Oysters and clams, and seafood. Calamari, octopus, but oysters, my favorite.
Oysters, yeah. Right. Childhood idol.
My father was an idol because my father was involved in sports. As I remember him as a member of the board of the soccer team of Apollon, and I remember him how he was strict and to his principles, and when he had to take decisions, and how he was strong and powerful as a character, and how confident he was, and how also gentle and nice and warm, and he was soft but also tough. And
love the answer, man.
Yes,
I love the answer.
Yes.
Pre-game superstitions?
Few, not a lot, but I cannot say them now because otherwise I burn them.
Okay, fine. If you can go back in time and replay one game, which one would it be?
We discussed about that. 2015, 2017, two games to play them again.
I said one.
Two, both.
But you have to not only say I want to replay the game, but I want to replay it in a different location.
Yes, exactly.
Top three EuroLeague memories.
Number one, Maccabi Panathinaikos last year, when the fans raised the banner with my face after I extend my contract. Nice. And all the fans sing my name. And every time that they sing my name, this is number one. Number two, the qualification of last year of Maccabi.
Mm-hmm. I assume that one was coming.
The third one was my first Final Four and my first final, 2015. My first year as head coach in EuroLeague to play the final.
My last question is supposed to be what your plans when this is all done and over with, but I feel like you're going to be coaching for like another 15, 20 years. So,
who knows?
I think, coach, if I could answer the last question, it goes back to your first question.
I will tell you something about this question, connecting also what you said. Listen, I think one of the best things that coach should have to succeed is to be ready to go at home tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
If you think like that, I think you can succeed. Because with this way, if you are thinking with this way, you are ready to take a tough decision. Let's say if somebody interferes to your job and you don't like it, you need to be ready to quit from your job. Let's say I had always this principle. Let's say I don't like the board to bring me one player without me knowing, let's say. If this happens, I will go home. So you never know. You can be, let's say, in a winning strike and something happen that it's against your principles. I'm ready to go home. And I don't know if I will find a job. But to tell you the truth, I'm not thinking about stopping. I love basketball. I started to coach because I love basketball. I told you this before. I'm not, let's say, my first thing is to enjoy to coach. And till now, you know, I think I'm not 53 years old, 54. I'm not 54, now we change the year, 2021. I'm not 54, I'm like as I started, 19 years old.
Now for the moment of truth, man, the moment we've all been waiting for. It's time to test your EuroLeague knowledge.
The crossover test.
I got five questions and we're done with the interview. They go from easy to hardest.
These are questions like journalist questions about scores, about
trivia like questions. We're testing your EuroLeague knowledge, all right?
Okay.
First question is worth 10 points, second 20, third 30, 40, 50. Question number one, how many rounds does the regular season of the EuroLeague have? It's worth 10 points.
Two.
No, how many rounds?
Ah, 17.
The regular season.
How many rounds the regular season? 34.
There you go.
Okay.
We'll give you the 10 points. You said 17.
Okay. No, I thought first round, second round.
Yeah. I know. I knew you were on the right path. We're gonna give you those 10 points.
Okay. Thank you.
Who was the coach of Maccabi in 2004-2005 when they won the titles?
2004-2005 when they won the titles. Pini Gerson.
20 points. You're at 30.
30.
Which Maccabi player has had the highest point index rating, PIR, in a single game in the EuroLeague history?
Nikola Vucic.
Nope, you got that one wrong. That's what I would have guessed too. That one's Anthony Parker.
Wow. That was my second option.
Yeah, well, we don't give second options here at the crossover.
I know. Okay.
Yeah. You got 30 points. Question number four. How many times has Fenerbahce and Beko Istanbul qualified for the EuroLeague playoffs since the year 2000?
Fener?
This one's worth 40 points.
10.
Nope, 7. 2004, 2005, 2007, 8, 14, 15, 15, 16, and then from there.
Okay.
7 times. Coach, you're on 30 points, and this is the 50-point question. The question is, what was the result, the final score, at the championship game in 2014 in Milan between Maccabi Tel Aviv and Real Madrid?
Maybe you want also the telephone and the addresses of the scoring table people.
It's worth 50 points, Coach. What do you expect, an easy one?
I don't remember at all. 104, 102.
No, 86-98.
Okay.
All right. As I always say, 98-86. I always put the winning team up front.
Okay.
But
okay.
That's it, man. You got 30 points on your test.
Not bad.
Not bad. Not bad at all. I think you.
Average.
You almost had Anthony Parker, but I.
Yeah.
Your answer was still a good one. Hey, Coach. First of all, I mean, we spent an hour and like 30 something minutes here, man. And it's been my pleasure to get to know you better. I've seen you from game and game on the bench and admired the way your calmness, your style, your ability to kind of transmit your personality, your team, and then watching you change the culture of teams and the winning mentality is something that not too many coaches have. And I just admire you. Couldn't wait to do this interview, and I just want to thank you for taking all this time and being so open and honest with us here at the Crossover.
Thank you very much, Joe, and I'm very happy that I met you, not today, let's say 2015, I think 2015.
Yep.
During the Final Four, we met closer and we started to talk more open to each other, and I'm very honored that I'm your guest. And I wish to you good luck for the crossover. And I'm very happy that I had this conversation and interview and podcast with you and all the fans of Maccabi and all the basketball, EuroLeague basketball fans.
Exactly. Thanks, Coach. You have a good season now.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. If you like what you've heard, subscribe now so you don't miss an episode and leave us a review on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. You can also get in touch via Twitter and Instagram at EuroLeague using the hashtag ELCrossover or on Facebook at the EuroLeague.